Insight with Bruce Dumont.
Sergeant Shriver is our guest today on this program, former president of the Chicago Board of Education, former director of the Peace Corps, former director of the Office of Economic Opportunity, former ambassador to France, the 1972 Democratic candidate for Vice President of the United States, and currently a candidate for the Democratic nomination for president. Mr. Shriver, it's nice to have you with us.
Thank you. I'm very happy to be here with you.
Why are you running for president, and what special qualities do you feel you have that you could bring to the White House?
I'm running because I think our country is faced with some very desperate situations. Overseas, we're losing in Africa, in Latin America, at the United Nations. We're not doing well in our trade negotiations with the Russians. We're losing prestige and power. Internally, we are at the end of 8 years of business recession, if not depression. We still have 7 million Americans unemployed. The Republicans say that they will have that many people unemployed for another 4 or 5 years. We still have inflation at very high levels, huge government deficits, and escalating prices. Somebody has to step in and change both those foreign policies and those domestic policies.
In the area of the United Nations, what changes would you make as far as the tone of the United States ambassadorship to the UN?
Tone doesn't make any difference. It's the policies that count. We are following wrong policies with respect to the Republic of South Africa, with respect to Rhodesia, with respect to Tanzania, with respect to Nigeria, with respect to Ghana, and the same thing is true in Latin America. We have got to have new economic policies with respect, for example, to commodity prices. We're going to have to enter into agreements about bauxite and rubber and coffee and tin and copper and other products that are produced overseas in third and fourth world countries upon which they're...
So we have the wrong allegiances.
We have the wrong policies, not allegiances, policies. Allegiances at the United Nations, votes at the United Nations follow from policy decisions, not from tones. You can make the most brilliant speeches in the United States and not in the United Nations and not change a vote, because those people are not voting on how your rhetoric is, how literate you are, how many PhDs you've got. They're voting on policies. What's good for their country? What's bad for their country? And our foreign policies have been bad for most of the black African countries and for most of the Latin American countries. And we've got to change our policies if we want to start winning votes at the UN.
In your statement of candidacy, you mentioned, and this is a quote, "The forward movement of America has been reversed." That was written several months ago. Do you see any difference in that as a result of the recent statistics that suggest that there is an upswing in the economy and that perhaps President Ford has been responsible for it?
None whatsoever, because it's just like a man who's drowning in 20 feet of water. He's now drowning in 10 feet of water, but he's still drowning.
But isn't the upswing there? Isn't there a chance that if you look down the road 3 to 6 months that it may be even further along? And what could you do as president of the United States that may speed that process up?
The Republicans have been saying for 8 years, look down further down the road and things are going to get better. And they continually get worse. The fact is that for 8 years under Nixon and Ford, we've had the greatest deficits in the peacetime history of America. More people have been thrown out of work than ever before in the history of our country, except under Herbert Hoover. More people have been put onto welfare in the last 8 years than ever in the history of the United States. Those policies have got to be changed. 8 years of that is more than enough to know that regardless of whether it's Republican or Democrat, it doesn't work.
All right, if you were inaugurated, let's look ahead to January 20th of 1977, and let's assume that you've been elected president of the United States. What specifically would you do to turn things around as far as the economy is concerned, and how long would it take?
It would take 18 months for me to turn it around. I've published a written, detailed program for the economic recovery of the United States. I'm the only candidate that has, and I include President Ford and Ronald Reagan and all the Democrats. My program puts people back to work. It curtails unemployment. It has a tax reform program to it. It has an energy program to it. It has a food program to it. And that program is published, and it's available to anybody who wants to write. They can come down to 20 North State Street and get it.
Well, I know several weeks ago the Washington Post congratulated you on that particular report.
That's correct. One thing
that they talk about is the union aspect of it, because one of the suggestions is that there be a national compact in which unions might agree to hold down wage demands in return for tax cuts to maintain purchasing power. How realistic is it that you would be able to persuade union leadership to push this amongst their membership?
and not to demand the increases.
Whenever we've had a president who appealed to the working people of this country on a patriotic and intelligent, rational, economic basis, the American working people have always responded. What we fail to have now is the leadership in the White House, which would motivate people to respond to a national program. The program has to be fair. The American working man is now getting about 6% less purchasing power than he had in 72. So we can't expect him to continue to go down, down, down while prices go up, up, up. This has got to be a common compact, which is good for the working man and for business. Otherwise, we're going to be in a desperate situation in this country. We already are in very bad shape economically, and the slight improvement that we got now is negligible by comparison to what we've been going through. And anyhow, it's a fine thing for somebody like President Ford to say, hey, look what I've done. I've improved the economy a little bit. Who created the mess to begin with? He and Nixon created it, and now they're saying they should be complimented for improving it a little bit.
There are many people in the country, however, who may look further back than Nixon and Ford on that, and they may point to President Johnson, and they may specifically look at the war on poverty and your relationship with the war on poverty as an integral part of wasteful government programs that really did not work properly. And I'm not just talking about conservative American voters. There are many liberals that question the wisdom of the war on poverty. You were at the head of that program. How do you respond to these charges from many people who perhaps are close friends of yours who are liberals?
I wish that they would look at it, because if they looked at it and they knew anything about it, they would not take the position you've just described. In the first place, the war on poverty was one half the size of the Small Business Administration. It was 1/500th the size of the Defense Department. Secondly, in the entire period when the war on poverty was going on, the number of poor people in America went down drastically. And it wasn't until the war on poverty was stopped that the number of poor people in America began to go up in terms of percentages and in terms of absolute numbers.
Well, are you suggesting that the war on poverty really was not a war at all, or did not have the full support of the President of the United States at that time, Lyndon Johnson?
I certainly do, and I said it at the time. That's nothing new. I proposed a five-year plan in 1965. It was never implemented. The President got it. If it had been implemented, in the opinion of a Sterling professor of economics at Yale named James Tobin, we would not have poverty now in the United States as defined when we started it. We would not any longer have it. Now, the reality is that the war on poverty was never tried. People say you threw money at problems. The Defense Department wasted $6 billion building an anti-ballistic missile system in North Dakota, and the day it was ready to operate, so to speak, they closed it down because it would not work at all. And you, as a taxpayer, put up part of that $6 billion for which you got nothing. If we had ever made a mistake like that in the war against poverty, they would have run me out of Washington, tarred and feathered on a rail. The waste, if any, there was some in the war against poverty, and there isn't any program. There's waste at Sears Roebuck and General Motors and NBC, there's waste. But the waste in our program was minuscule by comparison to waste every day of the week in the Defense Department.
Our guest is Sergeant Shriver, candidate for the Democratic nomination for president. I'm Bruce Dumont. We'll be back after this message from Skokie Federal. Skokie Federal now has three locations, 4747 Dempster, Lincoln and Oakton, and inside the Jewel Turnstile store in Skokie. Earn top interest on passbook savings, 5.25% yearly, compounded daily from the day deposited to the day withdrawn.
Look to the builders of happiness. Look to Skokie Federal.
We continue with our guest, Sergeant Shriver, candidate for the Democratic nomination for president. Recently, Gary Wills, the syndicated columnist who appears locally in the Chicago Sun-Times, wrote a complimentary column about you, Mr. Shriver. He described you as one of the brightest, one of the most well-prepared, and one of the few candidates who reads on a regular basis. But he also went on to say that perhaps you are haunted by the Kennedy image, that because you are a member of the Kennedy family, that that has hurt you more than it has helped you. How do you feel about that?
Well, I think it does hurt me a great deal in places where people merely hear my name and say, well, this is just another Kennedy family member. It hurts me there. There's no question about that. But I would not exchange that harm for the great good that I've received by being married into the family, which I think has been the most famous political family in this century in our country, except for the Roosevelts, perhaps. I don't know of any family that's given more to our country in terms of life and wealth than the Kennedy family has. I'm immensely proud to be married into that family.
What was the reaction of Ted Kennedy when you told him you were running for president?
He said, fine. As a matter of fact, I didn't tell him I was going to run for president. I consulted with him about whether I should or shouldn't. He said, fine, by all means, go ahead. I also consulted with Senator Mansfield and Senator Mondale and Senator Ribicoff and other friends of mine in the United States Senate to get their advice. I also went to friends of mine all over the country. And it was only when approximately 150 of them endorsed me that I decided to run. The men like the president of the American Bar Association last year, Chesterfield Smith, the president of the American Public Health Association, the current the president of the American Home Builders Association, people like Cyrus Vance, who used to be Undersecretary of Defense.
You have a broad base of support amongst a variety of people.
No question. And also people in the black community. The NAACP has been boosting me.
Mm-hmm. There are people who either love or hate the Kennedy family. There are millions throughout the country. There are some that are in the middle. The ones that are in the middle recently have been pushed to one particular side, probably the negative side, as a result of the Judith Campbell-Exner affair and some of the other charges about the president being involved or allegedly being involved in attempts on the life of Fidel Castro. How have the extremely negative stories that have been released about the Kennedy family in the last 3 to 6 months, how has that affected your relationship with the voters, and do they see in you an opportunity to vote against something that they dislike that two men who have perished from the scene were involved in or allegedly involved in?
I've never heard any voter ever mention this, what you call the Judith Exner affair. I think that has as much effect on Kennedy's reputation as that book has had on Thomas Jefferson, where some woman wrote a book saying that Jefferson had a black mistress. Jefferson was one of the greatest statesmen this country has ever had, and the fact if he had a black mistress is irrelevant to what he did for America. I think this so-called business, which has never been proven, is a calumny on a dead man. And frankly, I think it's disreputable to be talking about it. I don't pay any attention to it, and I don't know any voters who do.
So you disregard the whole Time magazine article about Tweedledee and Tweedledee?
I sure do. I think it's a load of baloney, a garbage pail.
Our guest today has been Sergeant Shriver, Democratic candidate for President of the United States. We thank you very much for being with us today, Mr. Shriver. I'm Bruce Dumont. Thank you very much for being with us today and this week.
Insight with Bruce Dumont is presented through the facilities of WNIS-FM. The views expressed in this program are not necessarily those of NBC News or WNIS.